asked. Myrna followed me as I carried my grandfather's old-fashioned toolbox over to the one-car garage, placing it safely back into his old workbench, like he was going to be home any minute and would be mad if I misplaced it. He might have been long gone, but his anger over his tools being mistreated lived on. "You've always been good at fixing things," Myrna pointed out. "And speaking of fixing, you seem to be doing much better." "I've only been up and about for a week," I pointed out. "But thank you. Dad taught me how to do this." I held up the drill.
"I know he did,"
Myrna said, glancing around the garage at my grandfather's half-finished projects. She never even pretended like she wanted to get rid of them.
"Did I ever tell you that when your dad married your mom that it was your grandfather who showed him how to be handy around the house?"
"Really?" I asked. It sounded pretty unbelievable. There wasn't anything my dad couldn't fix.
"Yep. Your Grandpa Rick wanted to make sure your dad could take care of your mom, so he taught him everything he knew."
She smiled as she recalled the memory, which was obviously a happy one.
"When Becky first brought him home, your poor dad couldn't so much as hang a picture on a wall."
Of course I believed her, but the entire scenario was pretty hard to imagine when my dad's workshop at home looked like something out of a handyman's dream. My heart fell when the memory of my dad fixing the roof of my dollhouse came to mind. It was then he taught me how to use an electric drill. He'd always been my hero. There was nothing he couldn't fix. Until me.
"I wrote him a letter, you know," Myrna said, breaking the spell.
"I appreciate that, Myrna, I do. But you know Dad. Once he decides something, he doesn't change his mind. Maybe someday I'll reach out and try again. But it's probably for the best that I leave him be for a while. I'll try to fix things when I can back up my promises with some good old-fashioned proof." I wondered what my dad would think when he read her letter, or if he'd even read it. My money was in the middle. Him reading a few sentences, realizing what the letter was about, and tearing it into a million pieces. I'm sure he wouldn't be putting that one in my old blue shoebox, where I'd kept all Myrna's letters in my room back home. But you don't have a room back home anymore. "One step at a time," I reminded myself. "If nothing else, at least my letter will let him know that you're safe."
"If you're not on that bus, then we're not family anymore."
My father's voice rang in my ears.
"Now, come, come," Myrna said,
the excitement back in her voice and the spring back in her step. She grabbed my hand.
"I want to show you something."
She was practically bouncing as she dragged me back up the newly fixed porch steps. Myrna didn't do casual. Her mental state might have been slipping, but her style was as strong and bold as ever. Looking very much like an older pinup, her white hair fell right above her shoulders in large barrel curls. Heavy bangs with a slight bend on the ends stopped right above her perfectly symmetrical eyebrows. Her eyes were always lined, but just on the top with a dramatic cat flare on the ends, making her already large gray eyes appear doll-like. Dramatic red was the color of lipstick she wore daily, regardless if that day only consisted of gardening at home. Many times in my early teens, I tried to copy Myrna's style. Many times, I ended up looking like a child who colored outside the lines, whereas Myrna was a walking piece of fine art. Myrna yanked me down the hallway to her bedroom. Much to my surprise, she led me to her closet and opened the double bifold doors in dramatic fashion.
"Ta-da!"
she exclaimed, taking a step back and waving me forward. Myrna's closet itself wasn't anything special, a small walk-in with a few rows of shelving. It was what was in it that had me gasping and holding my hand over my rapidly beating heart. Dresses. Not just any dresses, but dresses from an era long forgotten. Halter necks with flared skirts, floppy hats, platform heels that had me falling to my knees in the center of the room.
"Where did you get all this?" I asked, clutching the most perfect high-heeled black platform pump to my chest. It was complete with a large white bow across the rounded toe and the heel. Holy hell, the heel was incredible, laced up from the bottom like a corset. I don't remember you ever wearing any of this. Some things I've only worn once. Some I've never worn at all. Why? If I had a closet with these dresses in it, I'd make every occasion a special occasion. Laundry, getting gas, watering the marijuana. Your grandfather loved it when I dressed up. So I wore something nice for him every single day. When he was overseas, he sent back some of the European styles that were trendy at the time. Sometimes as many as a dress a week. When he came home, I was pregnant almost immediately. When I gave her a knowing smile, she simply stated, "There was no television in the bedrooms back then, dear," before continuing on. "I still plan to wear them, even 3 babies later, even after you were born. But when Rick died, I couldn't bear the thought of putting them on ever again. However, I also couldn't bring myself to throw them away." Myrna laughed. "Of course, there is no way on God's green earth that these would ever fit me now." She sighed and plucked a hanger from the rack, shoving it into my hands over the perfect shoe I was still cradling. "I'm sure you could get them tailored. Or better yet, I've always wanted to learn to sew. Maybe I could do it for you," I suggested. Myrna shook her head. "No, my sweet girl." "No? Why not?" "Your grandfather risked his life to buy me dresses and ship them back to me. Feels wrong to change them now. Besides, I think they'll fit you just fine." I pointed at my chest. "Me? Myrna, I can't." I held out the beautiful shoe and the hanger for her to take them back. "No, I don't deserve this, any of it." She ducked around my outstretched arms. "Andrea, I don't know how much time I've got left, or how long the lights are going to stay on upstairs before they burn out for good. So I'm going to tell you this now, while I still have a chance." She placed a loving hand on my shoulder and squeezed. "You are a good soul, a good person. We all make mistakes. Lord knows I've made my fair share of them in my day. You have to forgive yourself. Love yourself. And for Christ's sake, girl, you have to grow some balls. Men want a strong woman who can give it as good as they get it." She winked. I groaned. "We're not talking about clothes anymore, are we?" "Nope. Just remember, lady in the street and a wildcat between the sheets." "Myrna, seriously, I think my ears are bleeding," I said with a laugh. "Besides, men are the last thing on my mind."
"What about Samuel?"
"Myrna," I said, "you want to hook me up with the guy who grows pot in your guest bedroom?" Myrna shook her head.
"No, my dear, but I wouldn't mind if you considered the man who's a lot more than he seems on the outside."
"What exactly is your arrangement with him, anyway?" I asked.
"That's not my place to say, dear. That's part of our arrangement. But I will say that you shouldn't be so quick to judge. You only really know someone's true heart when they really want to show it to you."
She squeezed my arm.
"He reminds me a lot of your grandfather, you know. I just hope one day you find someone who takes as good care of you as he did of me."
She plucked another dress from the rack and held it up to me. I hooked my fingers into the top of the hanger so she could take a step back to appraise her selection.
"I'm sorry," I said. Myrna waved off my apology.
"I just want to make sure that you know what you're getting into with him and that..."
"That's not something you need to worry about. Samuel is a good man."
"Who killed Eric? Are you sure about that?"
"Because he's shown me his heart," Myrna sighed.
Good people can do bad things, Andrea. You've told me yourself that you've done some bad things. That doesn't make you a bad person, right? I'm not entirely sure it doesn't, I admitted. Oh, phooey, you're not at all a bad person. You've got a big heart and your grandmother's eyes. She opened her arms wide. And with that, you can conquer the world. She added the dress, plus some high-waisted shorts and some crop tops to the pile in my arms. My hands started to shake. Aftershocks is what Myrna had called them. I dropped the clothes, and when I bent over to pick them up, she shot me a concerned glance. It's getting better, I reassured her. I swear. You need to go to a proper rehab facility, so you can make sure this sticks. Professionals can get you through this better than I can. I'm a nurse, not a counselor. I know there's more to this addiction thing than the physical part. Proper rehabs cost a lot of money, and the government-funded ones are more like jails or mental institutions, I said, trying to gather the clothes back up. Besides, I can't go because you wouldn't be there. Then here is what we're going to do, Myrna said, again clapping her hands together. She took the clothes from my hands and walked out of the closet, setting them gently on her bed. We are going to get you all fixed up proper, and then we are going to go outside and meditate in the fresh air. We're gonna what? She put her hands on her hips. Don't tell me you've never meditated. Not recently? I squeaked. Meditation wasn't really something I'd managed to squeeze in with all the shooting up and letting people down I had going on. She rolled her eyes and returned her attention to sorting the clothes. Your sense of humor can be as off-colored as Samuel's. I have a book you can read, and I will teach you. The world is a tricky place. Meditation is a vehicle that will help you navigate through it better. You know, avoid the potholes. In my case, that vehicle better be a tank, I said, bumping her with my hip and dropping a precious shoe in the process. Don't you sass me, young lady. I may be losing my marbles, but I'm still your grandmother. Yes, ma'am, I said with a shoe salute. Meditation is like stretching after a run, but instead of your muscles, you're stretching your soul, she said, pinching my cheek like I was a child, making me yelp. Now, you're going to take these clothes as my gift to you, and you're going to wear them. For me. For as long as you love them. And right now, we are going to play a little dress-up, she ordered. Is that clear? Yes, if that's what you want, but why? Because, dear, I've been waiting what seems like 100 years to see these dresses on a real person again, and what seems like even longer to see what they'd look like on you. These belong to you now. My heart squeezed in my chest. There was no arguing after she said that, even if I'd wanted to argue. Which I didn't. Not even a little. An hour later, Myrna spun me around to look in the mirror, and I gasped at the reflection before me. The green and white sundress Myrna had picked out for me had thick halter straps that snapped around my neck and a squared neckline that pushed up my breasts and gave them a fuller, more rounded look. The middle was corset tight and accentuated my waist, while the bottom flared out slightly in an A-line, ending right above my knees. And, of course, I was wearing the platform black pumps with bows. Who says love at first sight doesn't exist? I whispered, as I turned my foot from side to side to better admire my new lovers. Myrna set my long hair in a style I wasn't sure I could ever duplicate myself. One side was tucked behind my ear, and the other side fell in cascading waves over my shoulder. Decadent red was now on my lips as well, while black liner on my eyelids topped off the look. For an everyday look, I'd prefer a more muted version of the pin-up in the mirror. But right then, I couldn't even believe that girl was me. For the exception of the scars on my arms, the junkie was nowhere to be seen. I look like, I stammered. A human being. Myrna stood behind me, her eyes glazed over. Pride filled her expression as she joined at appraising my reflection. She rested her chin on my shoulder and smiled.
A woman, she said. You look like a beautiful young woman, which is exactly what you are.
I angled my head so I was resting against my grandmother. I was going to say that I looked like you. I turned around and held up my arms, but it had been 2 weeks since Preppy brought me to Myrna's, so even though most of the scabs were gone, the scars, both new and old, remained. Except for these. She cupped my cheek.
We all have scars, my dear.
She grabbed my wrists and lifted them to her lips, pressing a kiss to each of my forearms, patting them when she was done, as if the matter was now settled and Grandma's kisses solved all. And in a way, it did.
Some of us on our arms.
She pressed her palm over my chest.
Some of us in our hearts.
Some of us on our face. I absently ran my hand down the jagged raised scar on the side of my face. Myrna walked over to her dresser and grabbed a silver frame from one of the many crowding the surface. She looked from the picture to me.
Well, what do you know about that?
She handed me the frame. The picture was of Myrna wearing a very similar style dress, except she topped hers off with gloves and a white floppy hat. She was arm in arm with my grandfather as they smiled for the camera. My mother was young, standing at her feet holding a lunchbox, her blonde hair and light features favoring my grandpa, while I was a spitting image of Myrna. I held up the picture frame and looked again at the similarity between a younger version of my grandmother and myself. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before.
You do look like me.
It's like we were twins separated by decades, I said, as Myrna nodded and chuckled, taking the frame back from my hands and setting it back, exactly in the position it was before on the dresser, tweaking it left, then back right a few times, before she was satisfied. Myrna, exactly how old are you? I asked, trying to do the math in my head. Myrna sighed.
477, she deadpanned.
We both broke out into a fit of laughter so hard I thought I'd rip the seam of my dress. When we reined it in, she looked me over again, a look of satisfaction on her face. Her lips twisted up into a beautiful smile.
You look breathtaking, my dear. Your grandfather would have loved to see you in that dress.
You know, it was the very first one he sent me, she said, waving off the emotion that had her temporarily at a loss for words. Her eyes watered and reddened, but she stood strong, sniffling and straightening her back like she was daring the tears to come back. Myrna, I started, reaching out to comfort her, but she stepped back and waved me off.
Oh, don't be silly. I'm just an old woman, which makes me just about as emotional as a pregnant woman, she said with a sniffle, lightening the mood.
Samuel is going to love the way you look, Myrna lamented. What does he have to do with anything? Myrna quirked up a white eyebrow.
Didn't I tell you, dear? He's the reason I remembered to give you the clothes I'd kept for you. They're for your new job.
My new job?
Yes, your new job working for Samuel.
Myrna took one last look at my reflection and sighed with satisfaction.
It will be good for you. Give you a chance to clean your soul. Fresh start.
Is that even possible? I asked, but I wasn't sure if I was directing the question at her or me. What if the stains are too great?
No. You'll see. It's the stains that make us human, she said,
And with that, I felt a little more in love with my grandmother.
I'll tell you what. You go water the plants while I go and find that meditation book for you. When you're done, you can meet me in the backyard. We are going to have our first meditation session, and you are going to focus on the future and what you want out of life. We're gonna clean that soul you think is so dirty.
Myrna could try her damnedest, but I was pretty sure that a soul as dirty as mine would need a lot more than some new clothes and meditation to be cleaned. I pointed to the stranger in the mirror, a girl who looked like she almost had it together. I muttered, "At this point, bleach might be a lot more useful than a book on meditation. Maybe I'd ask Preppy about how to clean a dirty soul." Because although Myrna had enlightened me as to what he'd done for her, she hadn't seen his eyes up on the tower. None of it made sense. A guy who helps old ladies in their time of need couldn't possibly be the monster I thought he was. Maybe he didn't have a dirty soul after all. Maybe it was just me. Later that day, Myrna gave me my first lesson in meditation. I was sans shoes in the grass, but every so often I'd open one eye and check to make sure they were still on the deck where I'd placed them, lovingly, in the shade. We sat Indian style across from one another, in front of her flower box, our hands on our knees, palms up. Oscar grunted around the backyard. Both Myrna and even Preppy seemed to care for the animal, so much that I'd yet to ask why the heck my grandma had an enormous pig as a pet. But when he nudged my shoulder with his dirty, wet nose, I shooed him away, pretending to be annoyed at his interruption. I placed my index finger across my lips, and Oscar got the message, trotting back up to the fence and sniffing under the gate, like a dog smelling for other animals. Were all pigs that smart? I took a deep breath and attempted to rein in my thoughts and concentrate on the meditation. Myrna's chin was tipped up toward the warm sun. Her famous cat eyes were simple perfection in the bright light that made her wrinkled, yet flawless skin look as if it were glowing. Unable to help myself, I snuck another peek toward the back deck to check on my new shoes for the 100th time, and for a second my heart stopped beating. One was missing. I was about to bolt to the neighbor's house to call 911 or the fire department or poison control or the president himself when a shadow fell over me. I shrieked and tried to jump away, but he grabbed me by the arm and held me down. I fell sideways across the intruder's lap, all the while Myrna remained in her meditative pose. The intruder laughed, and I glanced up to find Preppy holding the missing heel over my head.
"Nice shoes. Wanna fuck?"
Chapter 11. Preppy. What in the fuck was she wearing? Her dress was hugging her tiny waist and pushing out her tits, and suddenly it was as if I'd gone deaf because all I could hear was the blood rushing to my cock. Everything in me was shouting at me to bend this girl over and fuck her until we both fucking died. I didn't care that Myrne was sitting right there. I didn't care if the Pope and the Dalai Lama were watching on the sidelines with Jesus himself. All I wanted to see was that glossy red lipstick smeared all over my motherfucking cock. "Rein it in, shithead," I scolded myself. "You have more important things to be focusing on other than her tits." But those tits. It looked like Myrna had roped in another one. I was glad, too, because as much as I liked her, when she'd insisted on teaching me to meditate, I mostly played a recap of American Ninja Warrior in my head until she told me we were done. Her current pupil had been shocked and amazed by how good I fucking looked and had fainted across my lap, unable to get a grip on her swoon. Or I'd scared the shit out of her and she fell onto me. It was definitely one of those two things. Regardless of how it happened, what stood out most to me was where her hand had landed when she tried bracing her fall. I'm not gonna lie, it was actually kind of cute when she blushed after realizing it was right over my cock. I admit that when I first saw her sitting there in that dress with her hair all done up in shiny waves and her lips painted bright red like the star in my favorite 50s porn, Rosie the Rectal Riveter, I didn't even recognize her. My first thought was very caveman.
Must put cock in pussy.
But when I realized it was Dre behind that getup, it added a whole new layer of intrigue to the girl who already had me intrigued. I had tasted that pussy, and I liked it. No, I fucking loved it. A fucking lot. I wasn't going to tell her that, but omitting information isn't the same as lying. I wasn't a liar. I would even go as far to say that my strength had always been in my amazing ability to be completely and brutally honest. Of course, the gift of honesty was an addition to my sense of humor, wit, charm, character, striking good looks, phenomenal yet classic sense of style, and last but not least, the tribungus slab of man meat dangling between my legs. But I motherfucking digress. So when my phone vibrated and I found myself listening wordlessly to some guy who I quickly realized was Dre's dad launch right into an apology for turning his back on his only daughter, followed by a plea for me to tell him where she was so he could bring her home, my first instinct was to tell him the truth and take all the glory and credit for being the individual who successfully reunited the estranged father and daughter duo. After all, that's what Dre had said she really wanted more than anything, to go home to her dad. And there I was, holding the capability to do just that in the palm of my hand. Dre plucked the fuck-me heel I'd taken off the porch from my hands. I was about to tell her that it was her dad on the line when I remembered the reason I came over in the first place. I froze with my mouth open and the phone to my ear, like Zach Morris at Pause Time, Saved by the Bell style. If Dre went home, then I'd lose my one last chance at getting Max back for King. I mean, it's not like I hadn't done anything for this chick, I reminded myself. I'd let her live and all. Motherfucking generous is what I really was. King had saved my life several times over. Shit, he's the one who gave me a life to begin with. And as far as heterosexual life mates go, I'd won the fucking lottery when he showed up on the playground that day and knocked the fuck out of a bully, who I may or may not have still egged his mother's house on a regular basis. I walked off and waited till I was at the back gate, far enough away, where I was positive there was no chance of Myrna or Dre hearing me before I uttered a single word. "Who the fuck is this?" I asked, inserting as much annoyance as I could into the question, interrupting Dre's dad, who hadn't stopped talking. His fast speaking made it almost impossible to make out his frantic plea.
"This is Ajnay Capulet. Who is this?"
He echoed my question, anger and confusion replacing the desperation in his voice.
"Ajnay, I'm the guy who picked up the ringing phone," I sang. "And you are the guy who called and made the phone ring. Go ahead, ask me another one. This is fun."
I bent over to pick a sandspur from the side of my boot, one of its unholy devil points stuck in the side of my finger. I shook my hand several times before it finally detached from my flesh, flicking it into the brush where it would undoubtedly find another unsuspecting victim to torment, with their ability to cause just enough of an injury to throb mildly in the middle of the night and wake you out of a deep sleep. Those little cunt seeds were so annoying. They were like the plant version of Dancing with the Stars. Again, I motherfucking digress. I sucked the drop of blood that pooled on my fingertip.
"My daughter," Adnay started. "Her name is Andrea. She called me a while ago from this number. I want to talk to her, please, if you know where she is. I made a mistake. I just want her to come home."
"Let me stop you right there, man. You sound like a nice guy, maybe a little high-strung, but nice. Unfortunately, I have no clue who you're talking about. The payphone I was about to use started ringing, so I answered it. Sorry, man. Might want to look into getting her on the side of a milk carton. Stat!" I hit end and was about to shove my phone back into my pocket when it vibrated again.
"Listen," I snapped, the irritation in my voice no longer fake.
"I told you that this is a public phone, and I don't know where the fuck your daughter is, but I'm trying to make a call here."
Bear's booming laughter interrupted me.
"Oh, it's just you," I said. And if a voice could snarl, that's how I spoke to Bear. Snarly.
I held the phone under my chin and picked at the tall grass that had grown from the connecting field and wrapped its way around the gate latch.
"Whatever's going on, you got it handled?"
Bear asked.
"Or is this going to end with me finding half-burnt body parts in the fire pit?"
"Jesus Christ, you put one fucking body in the fire pit and suddenly it's a big thing." Bear must have been somewhere near a highway, because I could hear passing cars and honking truck horns.
"Seriously, Prep, everything okay down there? We just hit the Mississippi state line and stopped to gas up. Figured I'd check in while I could."
Motorcycles roared to life. Men shouted to one another over the noise of their engines.
"You don't need to check in on me. I'm not a toddler," I pointed out, sucking on the tip of my finger where blood had pooled into a drop from the sand spur from hell.
"Yet I can hear you pouting through the fucking phone."
"I just got a lot of shit going on," I muttered,
pulling the gate closed behind me. Understatement of the fucking year.
"Like someone calling and asking about the whereabouts of their daughter?" "Yeah, I'd call that a lot of shit. What did you get yourself into now?"
"No, it's not like that," I argued. "It's just some guy looking for a girl who doesn't want to be found," I lied.
And if lying to Dre's dad didn't feel quite right, lying to Bear felt like I was coming down with a case of something I didn't know how to cure. Guilt. A disease I wanted no part of. Telling Bear about Dre, or my new plan to have her help me with the grow houses while I took care of the Max situation, was off the table. At least until I knew it could actually work. Getting him or Grace's hopes up only to crush them if it all turned to shit wasn't something part of my plan. Again, omitting isn't technically lying.
"You sure you're not just shacking up with some chick, Prep?"
Bear asked, laughing at his own ridiculous statement.
"Yeah, man, forgot to tell you. Me and Sylvia got something going on. It's real serious, too. I think she might be pregnant,"
I shot back, rolling my eyes like he could see me. Sylvia was one of the other founding granny grow houses. She was also 92 years old.
"But seriously, Prep, this girl, the one who don't want to be found, she in some sort of trouble?"
Bear asked, raising his voice above the background noise, which had only grown louder. "She's Myrna's granddaughter. She showed up out of the blue, all strung out and shit, and beat the fuck up. She's gonna stick around with Myrna and watch over my plants until the facility in Sarasota has a spot." Which was sort of the truth. I took the file out of the back waistband of my pants. Bear was now yelling above the noise when he asked,
"You fuck her?"
"No. Although I think about it. Although I've gotten a taste.
She's fucking strung out, has the shakes all the time. One eye is like way bigger than the other, and she's got this huge hump on her back.
I mean, I'm not against it, but it's not like she's first on my to-do list. Does she live in a bell tower, Prep? 'Cause your girl sounds a lot like Quasimodo."
"She's not my girl. Don't try to do that thing you do where you make this into something it's not. I just made the shitty mistake of letting her use my phone, and now I gotta get a new fucking number so her daddy stops fucking calling me wanting to know where his junky daughter is."
Suddenly, I was very grateful that Myrna didn't have a phone. If I were him and just as desperate to get in touch with her, Myrna's house would have been one of the first places I'd call.
"Whatever, Prep,"
Bear laughed, like he knew something I didn't, which pissed me off and was probably the reason why the need to defend myself had me spewing my next line of bullshit. When did life get so fucking complicated? "You guys are looking for new BBBs over at the clubhouse, right? Didn't Puerto Rican Fury and Robert De Niro leave recently?" I asked.
"Yeah, Jessica and Yvette left. Jessica's knocked up and marrying some dentist, and Yvette disappeared into thin air. But you know how that goes. We could definitely use a few new faces around the MC.
Bear ignored my use of two of the nicknames I'd come up for his club girls over the years. I named the one girl Puerto Rican Fury for good reason. She was, in fact, Puerto Rican, and always pissed off about something. The other I called Robert De Niro, because like the actor, she could pass for either Spanish, Italian, or Jewish. However, her smoking body was a lot more banging than her male counterpart.
"Why? You think the junkie girl would want to give club life a go?"
Bear asked before telling me to hang on a sec. He didn't bother covering the phone when he barked orders out to his men. I held my phone away from my head in order to avoid permanent damage to my eardrum as he yelled out for everyone to be ready to ride out in five.
"Okay, so yeah, the girl,"
he said when he came back on the line. "She's got daddy issues and a drug problem to boot.
Think this one was actually born to be a BBB, I pointed out.
All right. Bring her over to the clubhouse when we get back.
There was a commotion in the background, rowdy voices and crunching metal.
Fuck me. Gotta head out. Natives are getting restless.
Engines revved and became so loud I either A, didn't hear him say bye, or B, Bear hadn't said it at all and just hung up on me. Knowing Bear and his stellar manners, plus the fact that the guy was allergic to shirts and all that went along with that, I went with B. Dre jerked her head down when I turned back around, like she hadn't been caught staring at me. She might have been the one to try to kill herself, but I was the one on borrowed time. It was time to show Dre what else I needed out of this deal of ours, before she found out the truth about her dad and Connor. It wasn't like she gave a fuck about her life, I told myself. So why should I give a fuck about ruining it?
Chapter 12. Preppy.
Samuel, would you like to join us?
Myrna asked, without opening her eyes. Dre shot me a narrow glare.
Sorry for the interruption, sitting down on the grass.
Myrna, but your granddaughter looks like a younger, less attractive version of yourself, so I couldn't help but stare.
Samuel,
Myrna scolded, but I could hear the hint of laughter in her words. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath, feeling Dre's stare on me. Her body heat. A hand touched my shoulder and my eyes shot open. I looked up to find Myrna hovering above me.
Samuel?
Yeah?
I turned to get another look of Dre's tits, but she wasn't there. The sun wasn't either. It had been early afternoon when I'd gotten there.
Hadn't it?
Did I fall asleep?
Myrna laughed.
You've been in the same position for 3 hours. I don't think you were asleep.
Myrna helped me up off the grass by my elbow, and I tucked her arm under mine as we walked back to the house.
I believe they call it transcendence,
she said, extending her hand toward the sky and making the shape of a rainbow, like she was talking about something out of this world.
Transcendence?
I asked, scratching my beard.
Oh, yeah, I know what that is.
You do?
Myrna asked.
Yeah.
I had it once after a bad batch of shrooms, had to get my stomach pumped.
You are a smart-ass just like my Andrea,
she said, pinching my arm. I took a seat at the table while she opened the oven and used her finger to check on one of the cookies on the tray. The kitchen filled with the sweet smell of chocolate that made my mouth water.
Don't let the state you found her in fool you. My granddaughter is more than just a screwed-up kid.
She pulled a photo album from the shelf above the table and tossed it onto the counter in front of me.
Look for yourself.
I opened it up and discovered that it was full of report cards, all with the name Andrea Capulet.
Wait, Capulet? Like Romeo and Juliet shit?
Myrna smiled and nodded.
Yup, exactly like that. When Becky married Andrea's dad, Rick and I thought it was quite endearing, not realizing it would end almost as tragically.
Although the colors of the report cards as well as the teachers' names and the subjects changed, the letters of the grades remained the same on every page of every card. All A's. Not a single B, not even an A-.
Wow.
My report card was a lot more diverse than this one, I said, flipping pages.
Diverse?
There was a lot more of the alphabet used. I closed the album and slid it back across the desk.
Yet you are the smartest young man I know.
She opened the cabinet and took out her favorite teacups.
Aw, shucks, Myrna,
I said, dramatically batting my eyelashes. She swatted me with an oven mitt.
But if those grades don't show you how smart she is, this should, she said.
Lowering her voice to a whisper, she opened a drawer and pulled out a large envelope. She slid a thick stack of paper over to me.
Why are we whispering?
I asked.
She doesn't know I know this, look.
It was pages upon pages of canceled checks stapled to reports. All the checks were made out to cash. A stamp over them read, Fraud, in bold red.
I assume that these are the ones she forged?
I asked.
You would assume correctly.
Forging signatures doesn't prove she's smart. It proves the opposite, actually,
I pointed out.
Samuel,
she said, sliding the papers back to me.
She didn't just sign the checks. She made the checks. Security seals and all.
And, although Myrna should be pissed that Dre ripped her off, there was no mistaking the pride in her voice. I looked closer, ripping one out of its stapled hold, and sure enough, security seal and all, watermarks, account code, it was a masterpiece.
Wow, I said, impressed.
If you're not pissed, why don't you tell her that you know?
I asked. The same reason I haven't told her that I know she had a part in robbing your plants, she breathed deeply. Because I'm losing my mind, Samuel, and I refuse to lose my granddaughter again before it's gone completely. There isn't enough time for anger or alienation. Not anymore.
You know, if Grace hadn't already sort of adopted me as her own, I'd totally cheat on her with you, I said.
Oh no, Grace is one tough bird. She's been dealing with you boys for a long time, and I'm not sure I could have done half as good of a job as she has.
Myrna checked on the cookies again, this time removing the tray and replacing it immediately with another uncooked batch.
Besides, I'm pretty sure she would kick my ass.
Yeah, I don't want to fuck with Grace either, I said, reminding myself to call the cancer center when I left to check up on her.
Why are you telling me this? Why is it important that I know that she's smart? I asked.
Myrna grabbed my hand in hers.
Because I want you to know that I'm losing my mind. I'm not stupid. I know the way business works. I know the way your business works. She's around because you showed mercy.
I wouldn't call it mercy exactly, I said. Although I didn't know what I actually would call it. She gets a pass because she's your granddaughter and that fucks with business on a different level. It's not a big deal.
What did you do to the person who did that to her?
Myrna asked, her forwardness taking me off guard. I sat back in the chair. What do you think I did?
You forget that I'm a perceptive old bird, been around the block or two myself.
She paused and sighed.
From what she's told me, I think you saved my granddaughter and did what you had to do to protect your business and her. And I thank you for it. You didn't know she was my granddaughter when you did that, and it is a big deal to me, even if it's not to you. The reason I need you to know how smart she is because I need you to know who you've given a second chance to.
She nodded to the stack.
Look in the back.
I did what she said and realized what she had me looking at was two documents, a power of attorney and a last will and testament, leaving every decision and every possession of Myrna's to me.
What is all this? I asked. You have given me so much, Samuel. This is me giving you the only things in this world I have left to give. I'd give everything to my Andrea, but it's too much for her to handle right now on her own. There are some stipulations, but you don't have to decide on them now. Not right away, anyway. Those copies are for you. Take them. Look them over.
Myrna, this isn't why
I know,
she said, opening the refrigerator. She cleared her throat.
Doesn't Andrea look beautiful? The dress she was wearing today, that was mine, you know.
I stood up and rounded the counter, planting a kiss on the top of her head. She doesn't hold a candle to you. She blushed and busied herself pulling plastic-covered plates from the fridge and handing them to me.
Can you set these on the coffee table? The ladies from the church are on their way over for tea.
I did what she asked and was about to go find Dre when Myrna handed me a clear syringe.
Do me a favor, Samuel, and give Andrea her vitamin shot for me. I need to go freshen up.
She can't do it herself? Insert joke about her already knowing how to use a needle? She frowned.
That's precisely why she shouldn't be handling one.
Okay, you're the boss, Myrna. One shot coming right up. I had an idea. Where do I give her this?
Any muscle, dear. It's a bigger gauge than the one I've been using, so anything fleshy will work,
Myrna answered, flitting about the kitchen with a knowing smile on her face. She wiped her hands on a towel and tossed it into the sink. She patted my cheek as she passed me and went into her room. I didn't know what Myrna was up to, but I didn't have time to think about that or the now overflowing file weighing me down in more ways than one. I held up the needle and smiled. I had a motherfucking job to do. I pushed open Dre's door without knocking.
Paging Dr. Clearwater.
Chapter 13. Dre. Where's Myrna? Why isn't she giving this to me? I asked. I'd been lying on my stomach on the bed, flipping through the brochure for the assisted living facility Myrna was on the waiting list for, when Preppy barged in. It looked like a nice place, but it wasn't somewhere I thought she belonged. Not yet, anyway.
She's getting ready for some ladies from church to come over, so she asked me to do it. Now come on. Time to strip. You need some music? Make sure you start slow. Teasing is key.
He rambled. I don't have to be naked to get a shot, I argued.
Well, aren't you just a fun sucker?
Preppy held up the needle, smiling confidently.
Don't worry, Doc. I've seen like 3 episodes of Grey's Anatomy, so I'm practically a licensed doctor. Now be a good girl and bend over. Show Dr. Preppy that ass.
Myrna gives it to me in my arm.
This is a new one. Different needle gauge or some shit.
Preppy answered. Reluctantly, I did what I was told, but only because I wasn't feeling all that well and I knew the shot would make me feel better, regardless of where it was shot into. I bent over the bed and hiked up my dress dramatically.
You're a horrible junkie and an even worse stripper,
Preppy commented. I felt his heat as he approached the bed. My lower spine tingled as his legs brushed up against mine. I held my breath and started counting in my head, when the sudden need to push back against him surged through me. My nipples tightened, and I was glad he couldn't see my face because I was sure I was flushed.
Why does it have to be administered this way again?
I managed to choke out. Preppy chuckled.
It doesn't.
Before I could push off the bed, he pulled the cotton of my panties over into my crack and plunged the needle deep into my skin. It burned, but only for a second. When he pulled it back out, I went to get up, but he pushed me back down onto the mattress.
Gotta make sure it goes into the muscle,
he said, his voice a deep rasp as he expertly massaged the injection site with his fingers in a circular motion that had me moaning inwardly and even more mad at him all at the same time. My breath caught in my throat when his hands started roaming over my ass cheek, slowly tracing circles on my skin, nowhere near the injection site, heading further and further toward the place between my legs that was suddenly tingling with awareness.
I love those fucking heels,
he said, his voice lower than I'd heard it before. Raspy. Fucking heels. That could be taken so many different ways, but my mind couldn't process any of them, because his fingertips grazed the trim of my panties just as Myrna walked in the room. I jumped up, covering myself again with the skirt of my dress. Where I was frantic and looked guilty, although I didn't know what I felt guilty about, technically nothing happened. Preppy smiled and plopped down on the bed, bouncing on the mattress like a little kid.
It's not what it looks...
I started, but stopped, when I noticed there was something different about Myrna, about the way she kept glancing from me to Preppy, with her eyebrows drawn tightly together. The doorbell rang.
Samuel, when did you get here?
She asked.
And who's your friend?
Preppy. Myrna sat with 3 ladies from her church in the living room. I stood behind Dre, who leaned up against the wall of the hallway just out of sight, listening to Myrna tell stories about her past as if they'd happened that very day and not decades before. With each passing minute, Dre's shoulders fell further and further as she watched her grandmother, in the grips of her dementia, introduce herself to women she'd known for decades. Why does she always remember you? Dre asked, without turning around, a hint of jealousy in her voice. I scratched my head. Fuck if I know. When she's like this, she'll forget an entire week's worth of our interactions, people she's known for 50 years. But she usually knows who I am. Your guess as to why is as good as mine. I came up to stand next to her. She brushed her hair from her eyes. Come on, I said, grabbing her hand. I want to show you something. But, Dre glanced back at Myrna. Ladies, I announced, we are going to step out for a moment. You cool here for a bit? Hilda, a woman bigger than Bear, turned around and nodded.
Take your time, we'll be fine.
Hear that? They're having a lovely tea. I grabbed Dre by the hand and pulled her out the front door to my car. I opened the door and gestured for her to get in, but she stood there staring at the passenger seat. It's not going to bite you, I informed her. Dre looked back at the house.
What if she needs me in there?
She'll be fine. Get in. I have something I want to run by you. She shook her head.
I can't.
I was growing irritated. Don't pretend like you're the doting grandchild now. You kind of missed the boat on that one.
Pretending?
She said, pointing at herself.
You're the one who puts on this fucking act so you can get elderly women to do your bidding. You're the one who's pretending, not me.
Careful, I warned. You don't know a goddamn thing about me, Doc.
She crossed her arms over her chest. I know you've got Myrna fooled into thinking that you're some great guy she thinks is her savior when you're just using her to get what you want.
Guess you got me all figured out then, I said sarcastically, rounding the car to the passenger side and closing the space between us. Now get in the fucking car.
She took a step back, as if she had to prove her defiance. Does she really even know who you really are? And I'm not talking about the guy who makes her laugh and listens to her stories. I'm talking about the other side. The side I caught a glimpse of on the water tower.
You don't know shit about me, and now you've just proved you don't know shit about Myrna either. Your grandmother's got dementia. She's not fucking stupid.
Does she know you killed Eric?
She asked, staring me right in the eyes, challenging me, fully expecting me to tell her no. I put on my shit-eating grin. She sure as fuck does, Doc.
Bullshit.
She put her hands on her hips. Myrna not only knows, but it's been Granny approved, Doc. I have a feeling I could have taken out half of Logan's Beach and she wouldn't give a flying fuck as long as you were still alive, because unlike you, Myrna knows what family and loyalty is all about.
Dre's eyes widened at my admission and her shoulders fell, but just for a second, before straightening again and assuming a defensive stance.
Wait, never mind, you do know something about loyalty if you count giving that shitbag Connor a pass for some obscure reason you refuse to share. I mean, I could say you were loyal to heroin, too, but here you are 2 whole weeks sober, 1 conscious. So I guess you fucked that bitch over, too.
Dre drilled me with her eyes, her plump red lips a hard line. We were standing so close I could feel the warmth radiating off her skin and smell her light, flowery shampoo.
And you know so much about being loyal?
Fuck of a lot more than you do.
I don't have to listen to this. Dre shook her head. You don't know a fucking thing about me.
She turned back toward the house. I grabbed her wrist, digging my fingers into her flesh.
You're not going anywhere, I said, spinning her back around. Let me go, she said, arching her back and planting her feet for leverage. But it didn't matter how hard she was pulling, I wasn't letting go.
No, not until you tell me why you're being such a fucking cunt right now.
Fuck you, she spat, her face reddening as she pulled harder and harder.
Always a possibility, Doc, but stay on the fucking subject.
You want to know why I'm being this way?
She stopped struggling and stepped up to me, so close she had to crane her neck.
You.
She jabbed her finger into my chest. My problem is you. You grow your plants and make your confusing, sarcastic remarks and think that because you've got this unique, beautiful charm thing going on and you smile a lot, that you can do whatever you want. Well, newsflash, you can't. You got the old ladies fooled, but you aren't fooling me. You don't own me.
She tried to wedge her fingers under my arms to loosen my grip. I pulled her against me, roughly. I leaned down, my lips at her ear.
That's where you're wrong.
You think you're better than me, she said, but you're not.
Her voice took on a serious tone. She lowered her head and stepped back. I allowed her the space, but didn't let go of her.
When you've gotten what you want from Myrna, you're gonna pack up and go without another thought for her or her feelings. And she's going to worry about you when you're gone. She's going to hurt when she doesn't know where you are.
Her step faltered. She dropped to the ground and looked up at me with glassy eyes.
And it's all because you caused her a kind of hurt that you can't take back.
I released her wrist, and she rubbed the red mark on her arm and looked to the ground, shuffling her feet. I don't think we're talking about me anymore, Doc.
I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about anymore, she said, running her fingertips over the marks on her arms. I did things. More than leading Connor and Eric here, knowing what we intended to do. To my dad, to Myrna. I can't erase what I put her through, but that's all I think about.
She bit her bottom lip and shoved her hands into the pockets of her skirt, bringing the neckline down lower, exposing more of the top, rounded part of her tits.
You're talking about the checks?
Her lips parted in surprise. Myrna told me, I said, before she could ask. I purposely left out the other part Myrna had told me she knew. I told you. She's not stupid. Dre dropped her head to her knees.
What the fuck am I going to do now? I have to apologize.
She looked up to the house where Myrna was sitting by the window, laughing with her friends, that glazed look easily noticeable even from the front yard.
But I can't.
Doc? She spun her head around and quirked a brow at my outstretched hand. I held the file in the other. I think I know how we can help each other.
How?
I crouched down in front of her. I tapped her on the forehead with the file. I flashed her my best reassuring smile. First, I brushed a curl off her shoulder and she stiffened at my touch. You need to get your ass in the motherfucking car. Chapter 14. Preppy.
Why is it so important to you to get King's kid out of the system?
Dre asked after I explained to her the situation with King and Max. Because he can't do shit while he's locked up. And because he's not just my best friend. He's family. And family fights for one another, I said, turning onto a dirt road. It was pitch black out, and where we were at, there was no such thing as streetlights. Thankfully, I could find the place we were going drunk, high, and naked. And I have.
You make it sound so simple, she said.
It is. When I was a kid, there wasn't anyone around to fight for me. My mom was a piece of shit, and so was every single man who found their way into her fucking bedroom. I shrugged like it was nothing. But I'd rather take a spike to the eye than talk about my childhood. But I needed Dre to understand the situation. She was a junkie, a loser, a deplorable human being. I learned from her. She was a walking what-not-to-do guide to family.
A junkie loser,
Dre repeated softly, looking out the window. Ain't no other way to describe her, because that's exactly what she was, I said.
Go on.
I tapped my fingers to the beat of the Kane Brown song playing on the radio. Mommy Dearest was the worst of the worst, and not like she outright beat me or anything, but she wasn't exactly a member of the PTA. There was this one guy that she married. Well, maybe she married him. She called him my stepdad, but I don't remember a wedding or anything. Anyway, his name was Tim. He was the worst of them all.
What did he do?
She asked hesitantly, no longer looking out the window, but at me. Cracked my jaw as I recalled the day King walked in and found Tim rutting into me like a fucking barnyard pig. He beat the living shit out of me, amongst other things. I heard her sharp intake of breath. Don't pity me. I glanced over at Dre, who was picking at her nails and looking down at her lap. I sure as shit don't. Listen, life isn't about what happened to you in your past. It's about where you are now and where you're going. Onward and upward and all that jazz.
That's very poetic, Dre said. But I'm surprised you moved on without seeking justice or revenge.
I smirked. Oh, I got revenge. That fucker is very, very... Let's just say that what he is rhymes with shed.
How?
She shifted so she was sitting sideways. I leaned into her as well, until I was only inches from her face. That's not important, I said, not able to help my smile as I recalled a teenage king taking that fucker out of this world like the fucking trash he was.
That's actually kind of extraordinary, Dre said after a long pause.
Her words taken me by surprise. Why do you say that?
Because most people wouldn't be able to recover from something that crippling.
And again, I didn't know if she was talking about me or herself. I scoffed. Nah, I just don't let what that cocksucker did dictate my life. If I do, then he wins. Besides, him and my mom made my life so fucking miserable that now I appreciate every damn good thing that comes my way, and even some of the bad. If it weren't for them, I wouldn't have recognized King as my brother that first day on the playground at school, or taken to Grace when she showed a kid wearing wrinkled pants a bit of kindness.
Wrinkled pants?
Dre asked, dramatically opening her mouth in mock surprise, and my mind immediately went to something else she could do with those lips that could make her gasp. Or gag. I cleared my throat and looked away. Yeah, now that would probably go down as the biggest tragedy of my childhood, by far. Dre giggled.
and the sound did something to suck the heaviness from the air like a vacuum. I pulled in between two pine trees and killed the engine, leaving the radio on. I flipped off my headlights, and the still waters of the Caloosahatchee appeared spread out in front of us. To the right was the